Hey, just want to welcome everybody here. Say thanks for coming. I know it's definitely a sacrifice, at least for me, probably for all of you, to wake up. Well, for me, it's actually late on a Saturday, but early for a Saturday. But just want to say thanks for coming and, you know, for making the choice to be here. I think it shows a lot about our church and shows a lot about what God's doing in our lives that He would give us the motivation to get here on a Saturday morning early and have this fellowship. And so throughout this week, I was kind of thinking about men of God, and you know, it's something that we started here in the church, I think back in January. Steve did a talk and just kind of cast the vision for it. If any of you don't remember what he talked about, I know for me, it wasn't exactly fresh in my memory. I mean, I kind of understood the idea of it, but I wanted to go back and just kind of, what we would say in the Army, recage our gyros and just kind of rethink on, you know, what exactly is going on with the men of God. And so I went back and listened to Steve's talk on that, and it was really encouraging just to hear his vision. So he kind of laid it out and said, you know, as men, we need to be leaders in our church. We need to step up and be involved in all the ministries and be, you know, really be there, be at the front of everything that we do within the Rio. And his vision for men of God is that this would be a place where we could come together as men and kind of learn about God and be equipped so that when we get into those ministries, we're not feeling overwhelmed and we're ready to, you know, just kind of jump in and lead from the front and be involved in everything. So that's kind of the vision for this. I also went back and looked at my notes from the last ones, and there was a verse that really stuck out at me. I think it might have been from Dove's talk, but I might be wrong on this. I didn't put the speaker at the top of my notes, so. But it was 1 Corinthians 9:25. And it says, "Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever." And to me, that was just kind of, it was encouraging, because it's like, you know, sometimes it feels overwhelming to have the discipline to study God's word, or to be honest, even sometimes every week doing, you know, the things we do with, whether it's small group or church or, you know, set up, sometimes we get run down, but it's for a purpose, and we're training and we're getting ready for that day where we need it. And, you know, if we never get ready, if we never train, then when we get to that point, we're not going to have what we need. We're not going to be prepared. So that's kind of the idea behind this men of God, as I understood it, just going back and listening to Steve's vision. Today we've got a good, I think it'll be a really good schedule. We've got Mike Parsons going to talk on sexual purity, and then when he's done, Steve's going to talk today on the same topic. So really look forward to what these guys have to say. And Mike.
All right. Thanks, Matt. All right. Well, it was sort of interesting. I don't know if it's always this way or if this was intentional. I noticed that there wasn't any mention anywhere of what we were talking about in any of the announcements or anything like that. I don't know if Steve always does that or if that was just something special just for this topic. But it's an important topic, as Matt said. As leaders of the leaders of our church, leaders of our families, we should not be tolerating sin. We shouldn't be ignoring it. We shouldn't be saying, "Oh, it's not a big deal." We've got to. And in this issue, we see that it's truly an enormous problem, but one that's very easy. If it is something that you struggle with or something, it's not something that people would necessarily know about you. It's not something that we talk about. It's sort of an embarrassing, or it's just something we don't. We're not going to go around the room and have you say your worst sin today or anything like that. But we've got to remember that it is a universal problem, and it's something that we need to be aware of and we need to fight against. Now, you can just think about just the examples of people that have just done such embarrassing, ridiculous things. It's the sexual misconduct that we hear about from politicians and whatever. There's and not just, it's certainly very common in the secular world, but also religious leaders, Christian leaders, falling into these things. And And if you think about it, you're just learning, we just know about the ones that get caught. And then after they get caught, there's usually like a little bit of like, this isn't really true. And then eventually they confess and say how sorry. And are they really sorry, or are they just sorry they got caught? Because I don't think they would have come forward if they didn't actually. That's kind of how it seems to work. And some of them are, some of the stories that we all know about are a little bit, I mean, they're almost funny if they weren't so sad. That congressman who was taking pictures of himself and sending them to teenagers or whatever. And, I mean, if he didn't click the wrong button or, I don't know, he wouldn't have gotten, but just really stupid things. And, one of the ones that just was, really sad, a couple of years ago when this congressman, this religious, Republican, real conservative Christian, real pro-abstinence guy, and they have him on a video getting interviewed by this other woman about the virtues of abstinence and these sort of things, and those two actually had an affair. And it's like the most hypocrisy and of a Christian. And, you know, as you think about these things, these aren't guys that are, you know, looking for trouble. They're not setting out to do these things. They're just guys that let their guard down a little bit. And things just went into a downward spiral. And so that's really something what we've got to understand. It's a universal problem. It really is, and there's all sorts of things that are going on. When we think about these big examples in the news and everything, I also think about examples closer to home, people that I know that have struggled with pornography and other, and even ending up having affairs. And some friends back in California from before, we went out there and one Christian guy with a family leader in his church was looking at porn so much that he was doing it at work and he got caught. And they told him, well, you can't keep doing that at work. And he was so hooked on it, he kept doing it. And he said, well, we caught you again. We're going to fire you if you keep doing this. And he kept doing it. And they fired him. Imagine having to go home and tell your wife why you lost your job. But these are things people struggle with, and sometimes it gets that out of control. Most of us are able to not let it get that bad. But we've got to realize how much it really hurts us and how much it hurts God. And our lives are about honoring God. And we can't be tolerating things like this in our lives. It when I was a missionary with Pioneers, it was something that it came out that some missionaries had actually been caught or something like this with their computers, and so it was a big deal. You know, you're trying to reach out to these people and you have these closet sin issues that you can't deal with. And Pioneers eventually said, "We want everyone in our organization. We're going to buy filters for your computers, and everyone has to put them on their computer." And they made it like a mandatory thing because it's a safeguard that's out there, and it's just something that we've got to take advantage of things and be smart, not let our guard down. So I think it's important to remember that the enemy really wants to ruin our lives. He wants us to have a weak relationship with God. He wants us to have a weak ministry through our lives. He wants us to be ineffective in what we do. And ultimately, he wants to ruin and destroy us. That's what he wants for us. The enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And that's what he wants to do in us. And I think really his biggest weapon for men is really in this area. His biggest weapon, his biggest way to mess us up is really with this. And when I was I think it's really different for people that are not married and people that are married. The overall issues are the same, but the way we struggle with it would be much different. And I remember as a young person, before I was married, really struggling with lust and just all of these things. And And it was really a really hard time. But I remember that the understanding that this was the enemy's biggest weapon against me, and if I could beat this, if I could make it to marriage and stay pure until that time, that I had beaten him at his toughest trick. And that was very motivating to me to think that he's got a lot of tricks up his sleeve, but this is his biggest one. This is the one he's really going to use. This is the one he uses more than any other to really ruin the lives of men. And if I can beat him at this one, then everything else is just going to be small potatoes in comparison. And I think that's really true. Now, as we think about issues with things like internet porn or masturbation, I mean, these are things that are not good. They're not healthy. They're not, and we can often find ourselves rationalizing some of these things. Oh, they're not a big deal. Or, you know, we try to justify our sinful behaviors in some ways. And I remember one guy who told me, he said, well, he was a married guy, and he said, well, it doesn't matter where you get your appetite as long as you eat at home. And I don't know if you follow. He liked looking at porn on the internet. And he thought, well, as long as I'm having sex with my wife still, what's the big deal? So he thought, you know, what's... And that's what I think the general consensus in our culture is. Not among Christians, but in our culture is that, you know, it's a harmless thing, you know. It's just look. You're just looking. You know, don't get all worried about that. You know, it's just... But we know that we're fooling ourselves when we do that. And we can try to rationalize things, but we're just, it's not really true. And so, but when we slip, when we fall, when we do things that, we're gonna all slip in small ways, at one time or another. I mean, it's true that every 99 point whatever percent of men have masturbated before. Well, that's not a good thing. That's not, you know, but you can't let those things defeat you and bring you down. When you've sinned, you've got to confess your sin, ask God for help to and get right back up and repent and live your best for God again. You can't live in defeat in those areas. I think so. So that's really kind of the basis of what we're going to talk about today. I want to share a story with you from this book called The Pilgrim's Progress. Has anyone read The Pilgrim's Progress before? This is like the original Old English version. Don't try to read it. It was written in the 1600s. So the English is tough, but there's a lot of modern versions. In fact, I'm reading it to my kids right now. I'm a little over halfway done, and it's a really, really good book. You can see the, it's really a story about, like, the Christian life and the journey to follow God and the temptations and trials that come along the way. It's an allegorical story. And so, I'm reading my kids like a real Americanized one that with easy to follow English. And that's really easy, really, really good. So one time, so there's this guy and his name is Christian and he is taking the journey of life. Towards heaven, following the way of God. And all along the way, he meets people that try to take him off track. And he also meets people that encourage him to stay on the right track. And sometimes they mess up. Sometimes he has a traveling partner, another Christian person. Sometimes he's by himself. But anyway, they make mistakes or whatever. But at one point, they stop in a place, where there are some followers of God there, and oftentimes he meets up with Christians that are really encouraging and often give him words of wisdom and counsel as to his life, and he meets some of these guys, and they say, well, up ahead you may have some struggles, you may not know, you may have questions. But they said, but what we have here for you is a map. And he says, take this map. If you're ever not sure where to go, the map will guide you. And so he takes the map, and he and his buddy, the other Christian guy, they're walking down the road, and several days go by, and lots of things happen. And then they get to a fork in the road. And they're standing there, and they're saying, I wonder which way we should go. And there's a road that leads straight. And then there's one that's off to the left a little bit. Just a little, just like right next to it. And they're looking at it, and they're not sure where to go. They do notice the one on the left is a lot smoother and nicer. And kind of more pretty, too. A lot of grass and nice. This one's kind of rocky, and they're barefoot. It's a long time ago they didn't wear shoes. So their feet are getting kind of sore. So they're not really sure, but they're thinking this other side looks better. And then some guy comes along and says, I've been down both of these, and I know that this one over here is, that one that's smoother, it really is much nicer. You should just go on that one. It's really great. I say, okay. And then so they go down this other one, and it starts out really nice, and it's, they're right together, these two roads, and then the one that they're on starts to veer off, and they end up getting captured by a giant on that road. And they end up getting tortured and almost killed. And well, they get thrown into a dungeon. The giant lives in a big castle with a dungeon. And then when they're there, they realize that, you know, what fools we've been. We had that map. The map would have shown us. Why didn't we get out our map? If we had the map, we would have known this was the wrong way to go. And eventually they're able to escape, and things go, they end up getting back on track eventually, but it was very hard, difficult, horrible experiences that they had. And all they could have needed to do to avoid that was use the map. Use the tools that they have been given. And all these Christian people that they meet along the way, they're all really messengers from God helping them along the way and giving them the tools they need to get where they need to go, to avoid these problems. But alas, they didn't use the tools they were given. And I think it's true for us as we think about this issue. God has given us the tools that we need. He's given us the tools that we need to have victory in this area. He's given us those tools. But we've got to use them. We've got to use those tools, just like these pilgrims on the way to the king's city in the Pilgrim's Progress never got the map out. We've got the map. We've got the tools. We've got to use them. Well, the first thing we'll talk about as we talk about these issues is our thought life. Now, if we're really being very naive about things, we could think that, you know, thoughts don't really matter so much. It's actually what we do that matters. But when we think about it, we realize that all actions, especially in this regard, start out as thoughts. They start out that way. That's how it's going to start. And if we can get, if we lose control of that, lose control of our thoughts, then it's going to, it could lead us to much greater things. Now, even if we don't, we're not going to have an affair or anything. And believe me, all these people, that these celebrities and everything, they never set out to have it. Well, especially the Christians. It started as something small, and they never anticipated it getting this big. But that's just, it started that way, and they let that seed get planted. And we probably all know this passage from James chapter 1, verses 13 to 15. We can turn there real quick. James chapter 1. But, you know, God gives us the tools we need. He gives us the answers in His Word. But we've just got to reflect on these, remember them, and live by them. It says in verse 13, when tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me, for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when by his own evil desire he is dragged away and enticed. Then after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. Sin, when it is fully grown, gives birth to death. We can see the progression there, can't we? The temptations come, we give in to those, and they begin to slowly destroy us. Now, Jesus knew very well that that thoughts led to actions. The Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, what does he say about adultery? We all know what he says, right? If you look upon a woman, right? Isn't that what he says? Let me just turn there real quick. It says in verse 27 of chapter 5 of Matthew, you've heard that it is said, do not commit adultery, but I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Because Jesus knew, he's telling us here, if we're entertaining those thoughts, we're opening the door, we're giving the enemy a foothold to begin to lead us into even more sin and more trouble. So, how do we gain control over our thoughts, over these things that can even become addictions for many people? Well, turn to 2 Samuel chapter 11. 2 Samuel chapter 11. This is the story of David and Bathsheba. And it says here in verse 2, it says, one evening David got up from his bed and walked around on the roof of the palace. From the roof he saw a woman bathing. The woman was very beautiful, and David sent someone to find out about her. The man said, isn't this Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam and the wife of Uriah the Hittite? And David sent messengers to get her. And she came to him, and he slept with her. Now we'll just stop there, and think about this a little bit. I put a question there. What does the question say on your handout? Okay, so think about what we just read, just those few verses there. How can we answer that question? Any ideas? Just knowing what you know from those few verses right there, what could he have done? Stayed in bed? Okay, well, you know, let's say he didn't stay in bed because he went up on the roof. Okay, so then what could he have done at that point? He could have stopped looking, right? So he could have stopped looking. He could have went back down to his bed. But so, you know, when he was up on his roof and he's walking around enjoying the night air or whatever he's doing, and he saw this woman down there. Now that's a temptation, happening to see a woman naked. So when we face temptation, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to flee from it, right? So when faced with that temptation, the simplest thing to do would be to have done what? Just go back downstairs and say, that's not a really good thing for me to see. I better just leave. How hard would that have been? Would that have been hard to do? I think that would have been a relatively easy thing to do. Now, what about when David, but we can see he doesn't do that, right? He continues to actually allow his thoughts to work, and he asks questions and continues to think, and all these things happen. Now, once he has her in his bedroom with him, how hard is it now to say, you know what, I think I've made a bad choice here? Now it's much more difficult. He's already gone this far with it. Really, the time that would have been easiest would have been right at the beginning, right? Right at the beginning. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, it says, in verse 13, it says that God will not allow us to be tempted beyond what we can bear. That's what it says there. And the temptation for with David was really this initial thing. When he was walking on the roof, he faced temptation. Once he gave in to that, then it becomes very hard. And I think the way out was at the beginning for him. If he was going to take a way out, it was at the beginning. Once he let that ball start rolling, it snowballed. And you can't say, well, you know, God, you promised that there would be a way out when you're in the middle of an addiction or an affair. And well, that way out, God had set that up for you early on, and now you're in this place that is so much more difficult and right where the enemy wants you, so far from what God's plan truly is. So I think that's one of the key things for us to remember as we think about thoughts, as we think about these sexual sins and so on, is stopping things at the start. That's the easiest and best time for us to be able to get out of this situation. And and in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 5, this is another verse, as men talk about this, they're always saying this, take every thought captive, make it obedient to Christ. So, okay, well, that sounds good. That's a great idea. How do we actually do that? In Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, it says, finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, let your mind dwell on these things. These are the things that we should be allowing our mind to be filled with. These are the things that are going to help us, not hinder us and make it hard for us in our relationship with God and our relationship with others. So I came up with this idea. I think it's my own idea. When I was in Papua New Guinea, we had a school of healthcare workers, and it was these, they were all single. There was like 20 or 30 of them, about half guys, half girls. And they don't really ever talk about these issues at all, like with their parents or with their youth group or church, or it never comes up. And so the guys and girls, end up becoming close, and a couple of them actually became pregnant during the time we were there. And so, like, boy, this is a big problem. Of course, they get kicked out. But Jennifer and I realized, well, we're not really doing anything to teach them about any of these things. And so we came up with we did some Bible studies with them and talked to them about these things. And they were like, well, no one's ever told us any of these things before. So that was very, very good, really helpful to a lot of the guys and that I was spending time with. And one of the things that we started doing was recognizing when is a time when you seem to be most vulnerable to lustful thoughts or whatever. Is it, think of that time, when that time is, and remember to be on your guard during those times. Have some plan of action if those thoughts come up. Some people say, well, it's right while I'm getting ready to go to bed. Okay, well, why don't you start reading the Bible before bed? It sounds like a pretty simple thing to do. And then what about other times? What about using these temptations to think lustful thoughts or do these other things? What about using these temptations as a trigger to do something actually helpful in your relationship with God. Now, that takes some discipline. But what if we started using that temptation as something that would actually spur us on? So this is something I challenge these young men to do. Because if you think about it, if you take a step back, the enemy wants to ruin our relationship with God. And, you know, ruin our lives. But ruin our relationship with God as the foundation of that. And he knows he can get us to sin sexually with lustful thoughts and these things. So what if we take these triggers to get us to sin and actually turn those into triggers to read the Bible or pray or something? So that's what I told these guys to do. I said, well, why don't we, every time this comes, read a chapter, pick up your Bible, read a chapter, carry it around with you, get one of those small ones, carry it around with you, read a chapter of the Bible. And so these guys started doing that. They started reading, carrying their Bibles around, and, you know, every time a thought would come, they would, get out their Bible, and that was the whole idea of what they were doing. And then, you know, my thinking is, if we're using these temptations as a trigger to do something that's actually going to help us in our relationship with God, how much does the enemy, that's like the opposite of what he wants to see in us. So what if we can do that and we can actually turn what the enemy means for harm into something that's actually good and helpful to us? So that's just something to think about. We tried this with the guys in New Guinea, and they really found this to be very effective. Other things we talked about doing is when you're in a situation when these thoughts are coming to you, you've got to have an idea of what you can do to get out of that. So there wasn't a lot to do there, but in New Guinea, so we would say, well, if it's nighttime and you're sitting in your room, you've got to get up and walk around your dorm, you know, several times and just pray as you're doing that. And so, again, things to just, you know, get out of there, get your mind off of those things, focusing on things that are good, things that are honorable and true and right, praying, reflecting on the Word of God. You know, it's maybe your mind's not in the right place to pray, but at least read a chapter of the Bible. Get your focus on to what's right. Use that trigger to cause you to do something good. So I think as far as our thought life goes, these are some things we've really got to think about. Stopping things at the start, that's when it's easiest. And finding ways to turn these temptations into things that are actually beneficial to us and to our relationship with God. I think we've got to, oftentimes we feel like it's not such a big deal, and if it's just a little bit, it's no big deal. These are the sort of things where we're right where the enemy wants us. We can't let our guard down and let little tiny things start to sneak in. Because that's how it starts. And that's when it's easiest to stop. So if we're using our heads here, why not stop something bad for you when it's easiest? At the beginning. Once you let it start going, it's going to be harder and harder and harder to get control of. We've got to put safeguards in our lives. So things like filtering for our computers. And I still actually don't have a filter on any of my computers, but just in the last month, I started looking into that some more, and that's something that it's just a good idea. It's just something that, a safeguard that we can put in place. I heard someone say once, and I think this is really helpful, especially for married guys, if you use Facebook or any of these things, don't be friends with any of your old relationships, like from before you were married, like your old girlfriend or whatever. Just don't even do that, because that's just a great way for the enemy to start to rekindle something. And it happens over and over again that Facebook gets people, you know, back interested in their old fling. And these are things that we may not ever anticipate, it could never happen to me, but that's how everyone started out saying that. That's how all these affairs started. They thought, oh, it could never happen to me. and then it does. And relationships seem to start out, especially a lot of these things start out very innocently. You're just like talking and or whatever, coworkers or whatever these things are. And not putting safeguards in place starts to, we can get into trouble. At my old church in California, within the last couple of years, one of the pastors was counseling a married woman. And, you know, that's something that in Pastorville, they always say, don't go there. No counseling women one-on-one. But they ended up having an affair. And you know, they should have never went there. But they did. They thought, oh, it's fine, it's fine. It's just I'm helping her with her problems or whatever. But then it ends up they just did not have the safeguards. And that's why pastors always, that's like a rule that you should always have for these things, is that you just don't do that, because those safeguards need to be in place or these things can't happen. These things you never, a few years earlier, you never would have thought could have happened to you. And now they're in this, you're in this place where things have gone so wrong and you can't even get out of it. I like the story of Joseph and Potiphar's wife. I think that kind of takes it the other direction where boy, could you have blamed Joseph for sleeping with her? I mean, come on. I mean, she's in authority over him. You know, she really wants to go to bed with him. Nobody else is there. I mean, it's, and I'm sure he's got desires and things too. But what does he do? Does he dwell on that a little bit? Does he let his mind reflect? He flees, right? He flees. Even when she starts to really get aggressive about it, he's not going to have any part of that. And that's just such a cool example of just not compromising, understanding what's at stake. And boy, he paid the consequences. I wonder if, you know, after he is in jail, if he would was like, I should have just done that, and I wouldn't be here today. But just, is that? But then we can see how God works, and it was all part of God's plan. And we don't know what God has in store for us down the future. But when we remain true to what He has called us to do, when we, which of course includes not giving in to temptation, when we honor Him by our actions and how we live, that's God's plan. That's then He's going to use us. And it's so good that He did not give in. Imagine if He had given in to that. It could have potentially, well, we don't know what could have happened. But as far as the story goes, the whole world would have been different. He would never have been made the second in command and all of those things. Been able to save his family from famine. And huge things. And we can see what that means when we can be flee from temptation, honor God in what we do. Now, I have to tell you, since I've been married for 17 years now, and I have not ever faced a temptation as challenging or as difficult in all of my years of life as the temptation to sin sexually in my pre-married years. So 17 years in now, and I haven't faced anything that difficult. But I should also, that was in the pre-internet days, so I think it's a little bit more challenging for people now with the ready access of the internet. But this passage of scripture that Matt shared is something just right here at the beginning that has really helped me in such huge ways, and that's 1 Corinthians chapter 9. So turn there. And we will look at this. First Corinthians chapter 9, starting at verse 24. And this is the part that that Matt was reading. It says, "Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it for a crown that will not last. But we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Therefore, I do not run like a man running aimlessly. I do not fight like a man beating the air. No, I beat my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize. When I look at this example here, what Paul is saying, I see a runner that's serious about winning. Do you see that? He's not a guy who just shows up the morning of the race, is he? Am I here on time? Are we starting? What kind of race is this? A marathon? A sprint? What is it? He's a guy who's ready, who aims to win, right? That's what we're looking at here. And what does he do? Does he, if he's tired and not really, you know, getting kind of worn out from training, does he take a break and just go like, oh, I better go eat some more popcorn? No, he doesn't. His body, he says he doesn't just run like a man running aimlessly. He doesn't fight like a man beating the air. He beats his body and makes it his slave. And I think that's such a powerful thing for us to think about. What is our body? Does our body control us? Or do we control it? Do we give in to these physical longings that our body has? Or do we make our body our slave? Think about that. Who owns you? Whose are you? Do you let these things just kind of do what they want in your life? Or do you take control over them with the help of God? And I say, you know, I want to be like this. I want to be the guy who makes my body my slave. My body's going to do what I want to do, and I want to do the things that honor God. And I'm not going to allow these things to get in my way. So don't let your body control you. Your body is for you to use to honor Him. I think we've got to really realize this very important thing, just how important this fight is. Not to let our guard down. Not to let our guard down. When we think it's something that's not a problem for us, that's right what the enemy wants from us. We're right in the palm of his hand. He's going to take us and make a mess of our lives. Well, in the story of the Pilgrim's Progress, the pilgrims continue on their way after they get saved from, they escape from this giant. And in the Pilgrim's Progress, they meet up with some more people, some more wise Christians, or maybe even angels. I don't know. Sometimes it's one or the other, but. And they give them some other advice, and they say, up ahead, there might be an area where, let me backtrack. They're actually walking down this path, and they see a pilgrim. So they're pilgrims, right? They're pilgrims on the way to God's heavenly city. They're walking down the path, and they see another pilgrim being carried the other direction by the servants of the wicked prince. The wicked prince's servants are carrying this pilgrim, and they just keep walking, and they're worried that the servants are going to come get them too, but they ignore them, and they just keep walking, carrying this guy away. And they're like, boy, I don't know what that was all about. That was strange. So then they meet up with these people, and the people, they say, hey, we saw this thing happen. What was that? And he said, oh, well, up ahead, there's an area where that's very beautiful and nice, and the grass is so green, and the breezes are just lovely, and it's And oftentimes people get very sleepy there. And they just, you know, step off the path just a little bit, and they just have a little rest there. But when they do, they don't realize it. But just on the other side of that hill, the wicked prince's soldiers are waiting there. You can't see them. But once you fall asleep, they come up and grab you and take you as a prisoner and take you back from wherever you came to wherever you came from. So the pilgrims continue on their way, and there's these two of them, Christian and this other guy, and they're both, his name's Hopeful, and they're traveling down this path together. And they get to this area, but they don't even actually know where they are. Like, it doesn't have a sign or anything. But they're walking, and then Hopeful goes, "Boy, I'm getting so tired. And it's just I just feel like having a nap. It's just a perfect place to have a nap." And so Christian says to Hopeful, "Well, maybe this isn't the best place." He's like, "No, it's great. I just want to have a rest right here." And then Christian says, "You probably shouldn't. We probably should keep going." And he's like, "No, you keep going. Don't wait for me. It'll just be a couple minutes and I'll catch up. Don't worry." And Christian grabs him and he says, "Hey, don't you know what's happening to you?" And then he kind of comes to his senses and he goes, "Oh my, almost, you're right. I almost laid down and had a nap here. And then what would have happened to me?" And they're able to then continue on together, no harm. But what you see there is what? You see accountability there. You see people spurring one another on, working together. We all have times that are when we are weak. And if Hopeful didn't have Christian there to help him on, maybe he would have just had that nap that he really so desperately wanted, and bad things would have happened to him. But with his little buddy, they're able to help one another and make it through safely. And that's something that another tool God has given us is the tool of one another. And being able to hold each other accountable to these areas. And it's just something, you know, we're uncomfortable talking about it. We all just assume it's not a problem. But it's a bigger problem than we realize. A bigger problem than we're willing to admit sometimes. You know, at the I heard someone give a talk once and say that the pastors, there was a pastor's conference at some town, and the hotel in that town saw their biggest spike in pay-per-view movies of the year when the pastor's conference was in town at the hotel. Like, maybe they were just watching The Lion King. I don't know. But seriously, these are things that are done in secret, done in private, and we just assume everyone's doing fine. But God has given us this tool of one another working together. And we have accountability partners. For some of us, it's, you know, when I was a couple of years ago, I found myself looking at some porn on the internet, and it became, for, you know, once you start it, it's hard to stop. And I said to myself, I was like, "Oh man, this is tough." And I didn't have an accountability partner or anyone I was really super close with. So what did I do? I told my best friend, I told my wife. And of course she was hurt by that and everything, but I did not want to hurt her. That helped me tremendously, and I never went back to that again. At least I had her to kind of, and it's, you know, that was something that I didn't want to ever have to do that again. But I told her, you know, if I do, I'll tell you, and we'll talk about it. And so I, at least I had that, and that's, but we have each other. And we have to take advantage of that, that God has given us one another to help each other in this area. So So anyway, that's all the things I have just from what I know, what I've been through, what I've learned through these years. But I'll just hand it over to Steve now to share just a little bit more.
All right, guys, I'm not going to share real long here. I'll just highlight a few of those things. I don't know if I have anything particularly new. Two handouts going on. One's the, I can't remember what I called it, the little Christian perspective on sex. I think sometimes just people have a real unhealthy view of sex, and that can be helpful just kind of reading through that and seeing how sex is healthy and it's a good thing in marriage, and that Satan's plan, of course, is to pervert that, to take something that God has made as beautiful and good and make it into something that's bad. And I'm not going to go through that. It's just for your reference. And then the other handout is just a handout on sexual purity, just a bunch of different verses that I think are really good that relate to sexual purity or to thought life. A lot more could probably be added. Think of all the Proverbs that are written about adultery and things like that. But these are ones that a lot of them are ones that I've meditated and memorized as I've tried to deal with this struggle myself. And we'll look at some of those here in just a minute. But so let me start off by saying that I think this is an area that causes just massive amounts of guilt in men's life. And when I look back through my life, back to junior high days, you know, this would be kind of the little secret area of my life that nobody knew about. Nobody had ever talked to me about it. I never heard a message like this when I was a kid. And so, you know, as a kid, I had viewed pornography and I masturbated and I, you know, just let my thoughts run. And I always kind of knew, you know, I should probably try to curb this and stuff, but, really didn't see, the kind of victory that I would have liked to have had until many years later. Even in a pastor, I remember we did a conference one time where we did a little survey about things that we had seen and things that we had done, and we're just kind of bringing it out into the open. We're not going to do that today, but I remember just sitting there going like, I hate this. It's like, 'cause I knew I had to go home and talk to my co-pastor and just, and you know, it wasn't like I had been having an affair or something, but just to say, hey, I've struggled with some of these things. I've viewed certain things, and just to be open with him and tell somebody else what you've done is just, for me, it was just horribly embarrassing. And this is probably one of the hardest things I've done in my life, is to have that conversation. And to me, I think that's really critical. I think accountability is really important. For me, my main accountability partner is my wife. I know that not everybody, does that with their spouse because maybe you feel like your spouse just can't handle the truth or something. But, I don't know. For me, that's real effective because it's like, I don't like having those conversations and you see how much it hurts her and, it's like, wow, this is really tough. And there are some men that I'm also accountable with in as things progress into more serious sin. But, boy, I think that's great. And I think your wife is a great person to be accountable with. But I think the main thing, though, is to make sure that you're not letting sin foster in darkness. And one of the memory verses I've been working on the last few weeks, which I don't have with me. It's John. I guess I want to look that up. John 3, 19-ish. But I first memorized this verse, or started on it, because it gives a picture of why people reject the gospel And so I was thinking about that just in terms of sharing my faith. But is this the verdict? Light has come into the world, but men love darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates light and will not come into the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed. But whoever lives by the truth comes into the light so that it may be seen plainly that what he has done has been done through God. And just that picture of how just evil loves the darkness. It loves to foster, you know, just kind of thrive in the darkness like mold. It loves that kind of dark, damp place. And it sins that way too. I think it really thrives when no one else knows what's going on, when we're putting up a front, you know, hey, I'm really spiritual and oh, I would never do those things. But when we're open with someone, somehow that it doesn't completely defeat the battle, doesn't make us victorious right off the bat, but I think it puts us in a different spot where we're not being fake. And so I guess one thing I'd really encourage you to do would be to make sure that sin is not thriving in darkness in your life. So even if you're continuing to struggle, at least shine the light on it. And so talk to your small group leader, talk to your friend, talk to your wife, and say, hey, you know, I just need to share with you what's going on here. And here's the struggle I've had, here's where it started, here's how many years it's gone on, here's where I'm at right now, here's what I continue to struggle with. I think that's really helpful. And even just with the guilt, I think just sharing it, getting out in the open, I think is a huge help with the guilt. So, and those of you who are teens, I really encourage you to have open talks with your dads. I know, I wish I could have had those talks with my dad, and I wish we had, had that kind of relationship. So I think it's a great thing to do, and we'll just help your dad be able to help you process this as you go through life. Just a couple more things that have been really helpful for me. I want to turn to 2 Timothy 2:20. Seems like finding verses in a bilingual Bible should only be 50% harder. That's like it really messes up the whole thing. Okay, verse 20 says, in a large house there are articles, not only of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay. Some are for noble purposes, some for ignoble. A little bit vague what he's talking about there. But then it says, if a man cleanses himself from the latter, from the ignoble, he'll be an instrument for noble purposes, made holy, useful to the master, and prepared to do any good work. Now, we know scripturally that God can use anybody if he wants to. God used Samson. I've always thought Samson was kind of a big loser and really didn't have much to offer God, but God used him anyway. So we know that God could use whoever he wants, but from this verse we get some idea of if God wants to use people who are living for him or living a pure life and have cleansed himself from sin. And I think one of the temptations in this area is to just to take this area and say, I don't care what it costs me. I'm not going to tell anybody. I don't care what this takes away from my life. I don't care how this impacts my relationship with God. I'm going to keep doing my own thing, and I'm not going to let anybody know about it. And that's one of the temptations we face. And I know when I first started accountability, sometimes I'd be accountable, and then sometimes I'd be like, nope, I'm going to go to my grave with this, you know? And I just set my mind that I'm just not going to do it. And eventually God would convict me. And then, you know, I'd have to go back and say, okay, well, not only have I failed, but I've been failing for the last 7 months and I haven't been honest, and, you know, and that just compounds it. But I think this concept is one that's really helped me because it's like in my relationship with God, I want God to use my life. I want God to help me be able to impact, people in the church, to impact the lost, to impact my own family, and really to do great things through this weak vessel. And I didn't want anything to get in the way of that. And so for me, it was encouraging just to think sometimes it's like, you know, God, I want to be open. I want to do anything that I can to keep a clear relationship with you, that you can use me however you want. If you don't want to use me, that's fine. I can't control that. But I want to be an instrument for noble purposes. And for me, that kind of motivated me past the, you know, okay, I'm just going to hold on to my dirty little secrets here. But just to say, you know, are those really more valuable than having a good, vibrant relationship with Jesus? And so that's something that's been real encouraging to me. Let me just highlight a couple of verses off this sheet here. Again, you can go back through that. I encourage you to read through it and maybe just start off. I'm assuming that most of us or all of us struggle with this to some degree. And if you want to grow in this, just go through, read through it. I think most of Mike's verses are on here. And just, you know, I don't know, pick 5 or 10 verses off here and memorize them, meditate on them, and God will use that to help you grow. I like the verse top right corner on the front, Romans 13:13 says, let us behave decently as in the daytime, not in orgies and drunkenness, not in sexual immorality, debauchery, not in dissension and jealousy. Rather, clothe yourself with the Lord Jesus Christ and do not think about how to gratify the desires of the sinful nature. And that's just like Mike was saying, with just start, or stop right at the start. That's the easiest point. And what I've done is for years, as I tried to grow in this area, I would, you know, as I would start catching myself going down this path, I would think, okay, well, where did that come from? How did I start thinking about this? And try to kind of backtrack and say, oh, it's the music I was listening to, or oh, it's when I noticed that sales clerk when she was bending over, you know, and just try to figure out where's the start here and what can I do in those starting spots to have victory. Because as he was saying, you know, just it's like a slippery slope. The further down it you get, there's a point, almost a point of no return, it seems like. I know no temptation has seized you except what's common to man. God's faithful and not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. I think you can always say no, but I do think it gets infinitely harder as you go down that path. You know, can you imagine David laying in bed naked with Bathsheba and fleeing at that point? Saying, oh, I don't know what I'm thinking. Run. It's like, no, your mind's just so pulled in at that point that would be almost impossible. On the backside, top left, Ephesians 4:19, having lost all sensitivity, they've given themselves over to sensuality so as to indulge in every kind of impurity with a continual lust for more. And I think just to realize that that's our problem right there. It's not that just that we lust. I mean, it's kind of healthy in our relationship with our spouse, but it's that we always want more than God has given us. There's a proverb on the other side that's similar to that. It says, death and destruction are never satisfied, neither are the eyes of man. And that's the catch. We want more money, we want more sex, we want more women, we want more praise. We want more than whatever we currently have. And the catch, I think, in this area is to be content with what God has given us, or if we're not married, to be content in the spot we're in life and trust that God will have good in our future. About halfway down, there's 1 Thessalonians 4:3. This is God's will that you should be sanctified, that you should avoid sexual immorality, that each of you should learn to control his own body in a way that is holy and honorable, not in passionate lust like the heathen who do not know God. And on this, I want to highlight that it says in a way that's holy and honorable. Because I think what we tend to do is we tend to draw a line at what's sinful. And so we say, well, I would never have an affair, but sure, I'll counsel this woman. And, oh, she invited me over for a meal to thank me for counseling her, and yeah, I'll do that. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's lots of things that we do that there's nothing wrong with them. You're looking at the internet. You know, you may not go straight to a XXX site. You know, you might just kind of be browsing around. Oh, I happen to see that picture. Oh, I saw this other picture. Well, I could just search on bikinis. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, and it's just so easy to go on this path, thinking in terms of, well, what's black and white, right and wrong? And that could be kind of confusing sometimes. But instead of thinking what's right and wrong, what's holy? And for me, drawing that line in a different place then is really helpful, because it helps me do the thing of, you know, stopping it right from the start. So I have to realize that what's holy is at a completely different spot than what's sinful. Just one more verse. The right side there, 1 Peter 5:8. Be self-controlled and alert. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. And I thought that was really good, what Mike shared, just in relationship to the pilgrim, and in relationship to just saying this is the one area that maybe Satan is the most victorious. I don't remember how you worded it, but Satan really grabs hold of men. And again, I just know the temptation, if you're currently struggling, you know, the temptations to think, oh, it's no big deal, or, oh, that's all I needed. I just needed this little talk, and that's the boost, and I'll be okay now. I'm not going to tell anybody now. I'll just wait and see if I fail again. And it's not giving credit to Satan and to his tactics. We're not sizing up our enemy very well. And I think if you really want to be victorious, you've got to size up your enemy and say, oh, man, he's way sneakier and trickier than I. He's been around a lot longer. He knows how people work. And I need to do everything that I can to come clean, to bring this into the light, to be honest with my life, and get control of this. And so we need to remember just that we do have a real enemy who's out to get us. So, again, I would encourage you to memorize 5 or 10 of these. I really encourage you to make sure that you don't have a dark part of your life that you've not shared with anyone else. And I've sat in that seat, and I know that Satan's lies will try to get you to do anything but bring sin into the light. Honestly, it's something that we've all dealt with. If you call up someone and you say, hey, you know, I've been struggling with pornography, or I've been struggling with masturbation or whatever, I doubt that anybody's going to be like, I can't believe, you know. No temptation to seize you except what's common to man. You know, this is not going to be a big shocker to anyone. And then I guess maybe I'll share one more thing, just with accountability. I don't want it to be a thing, and this is where I think it gets kind of weird sometimes. It's where it's like someone will get together. Well, hey, I want to let you know that I looked at pornography and masturbated this weekend. And I guess like, oh, yeah, I did too. Well, let's pray for each other. It's like a sin club or something. You know, and that's what I like with my wife is I don't get grace. You know? She never finds that acceptable. So just be careful to not make it just a thing where, you know, yeah, we're both sinning, that's okay, because we still love each other and there's grace. There is grace, but God wants us to grow and to change and actually become different men, that we think differently, and that's not the big pull in our life anymore, but that Jesus is the big pull in our life. So I just want to share those things. Do you guys have any other questions or other comments and maybe things that have been helpful to you?